If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial. And up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
What if I told you Halloween used to be the most dangerous night of the year? Not costumes, not candy, fires, riots, disappearances. By the end of this episode, you'll see how America's most kid-friendly holiday was once a night of chaos, then surgically rewritten by the people who feared it most. Picture it through a child's eyes. Peoria, Illinois, October 30th, 1913. The sky smells like wood smoke and sour cider. Somewhere a pig screams. Downtown's gone dark. Someone cut the power to Main Street. At the church, Father Callahan steps outside and finds blood dripping on the steps. A goat's head nailed to the door, eyes open, tongue out. 3 blocks away, the mayor's 10-year-old son is yanked off his porch by teenagers in burlap sacks. They're laughing in blackface. Behind Miller's feed store, a hay barn erupts in flames. The fire department doesn't come. They're busy with 2 other blazes. A shrug. It's Halloween. Police log entry that night. No suspects. Typical mischief. The paper calls it Devil's Night. The city council calls for a curfew. The churches hold emergency prayer meetings. And the kids? They call it the best Halloween ever. Within 20 years, that version of Halloween was gone. Not the date, not the costumes, the danger. The raw, unfiltered chaos was scrubbed, cleaned up, turned into something safe, fun, marketable. A ritual rewritten so quietly no one noticed. This wasn't just America growing up. It was surgical, coordinated, funded, documented. Someone changed Halloween on purpose, not to stop it, but to make sure it would never stop again. Because when a ritual gets too wild to control, you don't erase it, you rebrand it. And tonight, we're going to follow the paper trail of who did it, how they did it, and what might still be hiding under the mask. So how did we go from goat heads on church doors to Elsa from Frozen asking for Skittles? Let's get something straight right out the bat. Halloween wasn't always cute. It wasn't about pumpkins or princesses. It was about chaos, real chaos. When Halloween first hit American soil in the late 1800s, it didn't bring candy. It brought arson, vandalism, riot energy. Kids threw rocks at cops. Barns burned. Livestock vanished. Churches got defaced. And newspapers didn't call it spooky. They called it dangerous. Here's a receipt from actual newspapers. Quote, children drenched in gasoline by local gang. Halloween mischief strikes again. Then there's one that says mayor's porch dynamited. No arrests made. And yeah, dynamite, used by children. This wasn't pretend. This was ritual with consequences. To the people in charge, churches, schools, newspaper owners, the Ivy League donor class, Halloween was a threat, not because of ghosts, but because they weren't the ones running it. And if there's one thing elites hate, is uncontrolled ritual. Anytime regular people put on masks, flip the rules, or play with fire, that's how revolutions start. That's when somebody asks, wait, what if we didn't follow the script? So, what did they do? They didn't kill the ritual, they rewired it. They turned the fire into flashlights. They turned sacrifice into Snickers. They turned rebellion into recess. This wasn't random, it was a plan, a deliberate makeover. You had secret societies like Skull and Bones and Masonic lodges, deep in early education reform. You had media syndicates, mass printing, how to behave on Halloween guides. You had occult revivalists who didn't delete rituals, they just recoded them. You had candy lobbyists who saw a billion-dollar opportunity in fear and sugar. Some were coordinated. Others, they just smelled profit. But they all wanted the same thing. Take the wild ritual and make it predictable, repeatable, and profitable. They didn't cancel Halloween. They gave it a costume. They swapped bones for cartoons, replaced fire with fun size, and we bought it. And look, we're not saying that it was evil. Some of it probably helped. In fact, it did. But it wasn't accidental. It was planned, funded, published, and aimed straight at our behavior. So before we ask whether the change was good or bad, we need to ask a different question. Who rewrote the ritual, and what got buried in the rewrite? Real quick, before we go any further, this channel doesn't run on ad dollars or brand deals. It runs on you. If you want to help keep the lights on and the rabbit holes open, please hit subscribe. It's free, and yeah, it makes a huge difference for the channel. All right, let's keep going. Before Halloween became candy and costumes, it was chaos. And I don't mean spooky decorations. I mean your house might burn down. From the 1890s to the 1920s, Halloween was a nightmare. Not a metaphor, not a joke. An actual riot night wrapped in a holiday label. Newspapers called it out in real time. Quote, mayor's porch dynamited, no arrest made. 24 fires in one night, firemen overwhelmed. Boy hit in the head with hatchet. Police blame holiday hysteria. This was all considered mischief. Kids back then weren't egging houses. They were lighting barns on fire. Some towns banned Halloween completely. And why? Because trick didn't mean toilet paper. It meant missing pets, broken windows, and in some cases, missing kids. Depending on where you lived, Halloween had different names. Mischief Night, Goosey Night, Devil's Night. Detroit made it famous. By the 1980s, whole neighborhoods were on fire. But that wasn't new. It had been happening since the early 1900s. One 1915 report said a teenage girl got shot. A store owner thought she was a looter. In another, an 8-year-old was kidnapped in the chaos and found across state lines. And somehow, it was still called a holiday. So what made it spiral like this? Well, here's where it gets weird. Sociologists studied Halloween, and their answer wasn't bad parenting or kids these days. They said Halloween was controlled disorder, a pressure valve. One night where people, especially kids, could let the dark stuff out. Fear, rebellion, even trauma. Quote, in 1919, one researcher called it a ritualized purge of restraint, a release of the collective shadow. Little dramatic, but he had a point. Halloween wasn't just fun. It was where kids learned they had power, where rules could bend, where fear became a game. And to the people in charge, well, that was terrifying. Because if kids could organize chaos once a year, what else could they organize? So by the 1910s, it got out of control. Churches called it demonic. Police wrote letters begging for help, because they couldn't handle 13-year-olds with crowbars and gasoline. And instead of banning it altogether, they did something way smarter. They kept the ritual, but they changed the rules. They made it cute, safe, repeatable. And most people never noticed. You've got kids firebombing outhouses, pigs dragged into churches, police departments tapping out. Halloween wasn't spooky. It was a crisis. If you were a church leader, a school board member, or just someone with money and a porch, you didn't want torched. You had two options: ban Halloween or take it over. Guess which one they picked? Enter the moral reformers, early 1900s social clubs that decided Halloween needed a makeover. The big ones? The Daughters of the American Revolution, a proud, powerful, and not fans of Satan-themed holidays. The Women's Christian Temperance Union, already trying to ban alcohol, now adding Halloween to the list. PTA groups, school boards, church coalitions, all pushing to make Halloween safe for children. But they didn't cancel it, they rebranded it. They printed pamphlets called Model Halloween Parties, with instructions like, hold a costume contest, serve orange punch, tell educational ghost stories, and absolutely no fire. Halloween went from danger night to classroom activity. And here's where it gets interesting. Some of the same people pushing these changes, they had ties to Skull and Bones, the Yale secret society where grown men lie in coffins, chant about power, and maybe cradle a skull or two. And that's not fiction, that's on record. But they weren't just college weirdos. They were lawmakers, publishers, education board donors, and yep, architects of early 20th century school reform. Fact, Skull and Bones alumni helped shape things like national education standards, character development programs, and even holiday behavioral guides used in schools. Now, picture that. The same people who held candlelit rituals in locked buildings were also deciding how your kid should bob for apples. Coincidence? Maybe. But let's keep going. Let's talk Lucius Curtis, owner of Curtis Publishing Company, the machine behind the Saturday Evening Post and Ladies' Home Journal. Those magazines were everywhere, and they were full of stuff like 10 ways to host a safe Halloween party, how to keep mischief out of your neighborhood, why your kids shouldn't celebrate the devil. But Curtis wasn't just a publisher. He was a donor to elite social clubs and Masonic lodges, and many of his printing partners also Freemasons. And reminder, Masons specialize in ritual repurposing. That's literally their thing. Symbols, layers, secrecy, control. Look, we're not saying everyone was in a smoke-filled room plotting Halloween's cartoonification, but the receipts paint a clear picture. Elites who hated chaos, secret societies who knew how to script rituals, publishers who could shape behavior, and candy companies ready to monetize fear. Reformers trying to make mischief night into a teachable moment. All pushing toward the same outcome, not to stop Halloween, to own it. So, what was the goal? Well, it was simple. Control. You can't control a ritual unless you write the script. Ritual management. Swap rebellion for pageantry. Pacification. Give people one night to pretend and they'll behave the other 364. They didn't kill Halloween. They rebranded it. They boxed it. And they sold it back to us with candy and cartoon ghosts. Halloween wasn't just tamed. It was rewritten by people with printing presses, robes, and a plan. Once the chaos got out of hand with fires and riots, kids with dynamite, the elites didn't just shut it down. They rebranded it, and they did it the old school way, with books, pamphlets, posters, coloring sheets. But who printed all that? Not some sweet family press in Kansas. It was the Masons. One of the biggest Halloween makeovers came from a magazine called American Boy. It ran from 1907 to 1919, basically Boy Scouts meets Reader's Digest, and it was backed by Freemasons. Inside, full Halloween etiquette guides for boys. How to throw a wholesome Halloween party. Activities for young gentlemen. Avoiding mischief with manners. Translation, don't burn down a barn, go bob for apples instead. And it worked. The magazine was everywhere, like the iPad in the 1910s. If your kid was reading something, it was probably this. And here's where it gets sneaky. These guides didn't just change what kids did. They changed what the symbols meant. Jack-o'-lanterns were once spirit wards, tools to protect the soul. Now, they're kid crafts. Black cats symbolized feminine power and ancient guardians. Now, their cartoon mascots. Costumes were about eagle death, becoming no one to walk among the dead. Now, dress like Spider-Man and get sugar. This wasn't accidental. It was ritual recoding. And the scary parts stayed, just made safe. They didn't erase the old meanings. They hid them in plain sight. Freemasons weren't just hanging around in the background. They were the ones printing the script. In the early 1900s, a massive number of publishing houses, print shops, and newspaper syndicates were Mason-owned or Mason-aligned. Now, why does that matter? Because when you own the presses, you don't just tell people what's happening. You tell them how to behave. And that's exactly what they did. They mass-produced Halloween handbooks, model party guides, seasonal plays for kids, coloring books with pumpkins, ghosts, and candy, not death, fire, or ritual. The vibe? This wasn't a holiday. It was a product line, a new ritual rolled out like a toy catalog. And many of those early publications were anonymous, with no author nor organization listed, just appeared. Which, for Freemasons, that's kind of their signature move. So let's pause and zoom out. What is a ritual? It's just a series of actions with meaning. You light a candle, say the words, wear the thing. Do it every year and it becomes sacred. Once that version of Halloween was printed, it became law. No more fire, no more danger, just kids in costumes, reciting the same script, town after town, year after year. That's not tradition, that's programming. The fires were out, the rituals were printed, the symbols were safe. Now all Halloween needed was an offering. Because every ritual has one. In the old days, it might have been food for the dead, a sacrificed goat, or a barn party where someone screamed into the void. But in the new Halloween, the offering was much more simple. It was cheap, it was mass-produced, and delicious. It was candy. This wasn't random, it was a plan. In 1907, a group of candy companies formed the National Confectioners Association, the NCA. Their mission? Sell sweets to everyone, all the time, and make it feel good. And Halloween? Well, that was marketing gold. You've got kids going door to door, wearing masks, asking strangers for treats, and threatening mischief if they don't get any. That's not cute. That's ritualized extortion. The NCAA didn't fight it. In fact, they funded it. They ran ads linking candy to safety. They sponsored safe treat programs in schools, turning sugar into a moral bribe. Paraphrased logic, quote, give kids sweets and deal with broken windows and flaming bags. And it worked. Newspapers in the early 1900s warned parents, stock up on candy or face the consequences. Trick or treat wasn't a game, it was a threat. And the candy lobby leaned in all the way. They figured, if we're bribing kids once a year, we might as well make money doing it. So, sugar became more than candy. It became currency, an offering, a pacifier. And the spell worked. We've been doing it ever since. And now here's the weird part. Sugar doesn't just taste good. It rewires your brain. When you eat it, your brain releases dopamine. That's the chemical that makes you feel good. It's the same brain signal triggered by gambling or social media or finally finding a parking spot at Trader Joe's, whatever. That sugar high says, you did good, do it again. And on Halloween, it's a ritual loop. You walk up, say the words, get the treat, your brain throws a party. Do that 20 times in one night. You're not just having fun. You're being trained. Costumes, obedience, sugar, pleasure. Rinse and repeat. It's not just candy, it's conditioning. Back when Halloween was spiritual, people made offerings to the dead. Fire, food, wine, sometimes even animals. Today, we offer Reese's cups. And what do we get in return? Not protection, not wisdom, not a connection to anything beyond. We get just a sugar crash. It's like they took the bones out of the ritual, filled it with chocolate, and called it progress. But here's the thing, the bones are still there. We just stopped seeing them. By now, Halloween's looking less like a holiday and more like a ritual dressed up as a school play. But here's the part nobody talks about. Halloween didn't just get safer, it got strategic. Not just by candy companies, not just by ad men, but by psychologists. Halloween became a science experiment for training kids to respond to fear. Let's rewind to the early 1900s. While Halloween was getting rebranded with candy and costumes, psychologists were doing something weirder. They called it the safe scare. The idea? What if we teach kids to face fear, but in a fake controlled setting so we can shape how they react? This wasn't fringe stuff. It came from big names like G. Stanley Hall, founder of child psychology in America. John Dewey, the guy who helped shape public education. They believed in something called fear inoculation. Basically, dose a kid with just enough fear to make them easier to manage later. And where did they test it? Public schools. So, Halloween got a makeover. Now kids were dressing up as monsters, walking through haunted hallways, screaming, laughing, and then going back to class like nothing happened. The scares were fake. The monsters were cardboard. But the emotions? 100% real. And your brain didn't know the difference. Get scared, get candy, feel safe, repeat. That's not just fun, that's conditioning. Now here's where it gets creepy. This model didn't stop at Halloween. It went national. During the Cold War, schools ran duck and cover drills, telling kids to hide under desks if a nuke went off. Did it actually protect anyone? Of course not. But that wasn't the point. It trained kids to obey under fear. Same pattern. Get scared, follow instructions, feel safe, don't question it. And the model spread, color-coded terror alerts, endless 24-hour news fear cycles, and streaming horror content that trains your brain to crave fear like a snack. Psychologists called it a trauma loop, and Halloween was the first ride. Every October, we dress like corpses, enter fake haunted houses, let masked strangers scream in our faces, then we laugh it off and call it fun. And it is fun, but also it wires us. It teaches your brain fear, obey, reward, reset. So when something real happens, you might not question it. You might just reset. To be clear, we're not saying Halloween was designed to brainwash kids. But once certain people saw how effective it was, they leaned all the way in. Because if you can train people to fear the right things, you never have to worry about them questioning the wrong ones. Let's ask the question no one ever stops to ask. Why October 31st? Why not September 12th? Why not April 3rd? Why that night? Most people shrug. Don't know, just when Halloween is. Historians say it's from an old Celtic holiday, but when you zoom out, October 31st shows up in a lot more places than it should. Different continents, different religions, all pointing to the same window in time. When something opens and something crosses over. Let's start with the usual suspect, Samhain, pronounced So-in. Old Celtic holiday, end of harvest, start of the dark half of the year. They believed the veil between the living and dead got thin that night. So what'd they do? They lit bonfires, wore costumes to confuse ghosts, left food out for the dead, held rituals to honor ancestors. Basically, Halloween before the sugar. But here's the twist. Samhain wasn't the only one. The Romans had Lemuria. Not exactly on October 31st, but close enough to matter. It was their version of ghosts are pissed off. Better throw beans and chant Latin before they wreck the house. The Catholic Church eventually folded that one into All Saints Day and All Souls Day, right on top of Halloween. So we've got Europe covered. But what about the other side of the planet? Enter the Aztecs. They had Mikael Huitontil, Feast of the Little Dead, a full-on festival to honor kids who had passed, followed by Hue Micahuito for adults. Same season, same theme. Food offerings, masks, rituals, talking to the dead. Does it sound familiar? Spanish colonizers show up, do what colonizers do. They mash it into Catholicism. Out pops Dia de los Muertos. Still celebrated today. Still right in that Halloween window. Now swing over to Jewish mysticism. There's the Yahrzeit candle, lit on the anniversary of a loved one's death. But around the fall, some Jewish sects light extra candles. And why? Because this time of year is believed to be when souls travel, when the dead get close, and the living offer light to guide them. So again, more fire, more memory, more doors opening between worlds. That's four civilizations, all pointing to the same moment, and we're not done. When secret societies like the Theosophical Society and Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn started popping up in the late 1800s, they had a wild idea. It was called ritual harmonic stacking. In normal words, if you do your ritual on top of an older ritual, especially on the same night, you boost the power. They saw time like a frequency. Certain nights are like signal amplifiers. In October 31st, that's a power node. Do your spell on that night, and you're not just dressing up. You're riding every frequency ever layered on that date. From the Celts to the Aztecs to the Masons. It's a ritual remix. The same beat sampled across history, and Halloween is the drop. So what are we actually celebrating? A candy night or something older? Because from above, Halloween looks like a Celtic death festival, a Roman ghost purge, an Aztec ancestor feast, a Jewish soul ritual, a secret society time code, and a corporate holiday all stacked into one. So maybe it's not one ritual, maybe it's all of them. And maybe that's not an accident. What if Halloween was never just a party? What if it's the only night of the year where every civilization is listening for the same thing? And we've just been trick-or-treating on top of it. Here's the twist. Some of these changes were actually good. The chaos died down. The fires stopped. Communities came together. And kids, they got to be just kids. Honestly, candy is a better bribe than dynamite. But here's where the unease creeps in. This isn't about panicking over pumpkins. It's about waking up to the question no one asks. Who wrote the rituals we repeat? Because Halloween may have been the first American holiday designed not to celebrate, but to reprogram. Maybe Halloween really is about masks. Not the plastic ones we wear on our face, but the ones that were handed to us before we were old enough to know we were already playing along. What if the scariest part of Halloween is how little we remember choosing it? When we were kids, Halloween felt simple. You dressed up, walked the block, and got candy. But underneath all that, it was doing something else. It was teaching you how to face fear, in small, safe ways, with friends around, with a flashlight in your hand. It showed you how to step into the unknown, knock on a stranger's door, and trust that something good might be on the other side. That's powerful, especially now, when the world feels so uncertain. When fear is used to control people instead of helping them grow. Maybe Halloween's just a night of fun, but maybe it's also a reminder that fear doesn't have to shut you down. It can be something you walk through together. It's easy to forget how rare that is. A moment when kids, teens, and grown-ups all play by the same rules. No screens, no algorithms, no ads yelling at you. Just people walking door to door, sharing something weird and human and good. It's not perfect. There's still sugar crashes. There's still cheap costumes made from who knows what. But for one night, we all agree to show up, to take a risk, to trust a little, to let go of the serious stuff, and lean into the strange. That's a kind of magic, too. Not the occult kind, the human kind. The kind where we remember that rituals can bring people together, not just divide them. That pretending to be brave sometimes turns into the real thing. Maybe Halloween changed. The bonfires became porch lights. The offerings became Kit Kats. The old stories got buried under layers of plastic. But the signal is still in there. The part that teaches us not to hide from fear, but to walk through it, laughing, screaming, glowing in the dark. And that's what makes this weird little holiday kind of special. Not the candy, not the costumes, but the courage it quietly builds year after year. So now you know, Halloween wasn't stolen, it was edited, sanitized, packaged, and sold back to us as just a holiday. But behind the costumes and candy was a ritual with roots so deep, they didn't pull them up. They just buried them under something sweeter. And again, we're not saying it was evil. We're not even saying it was bad. We're saying it was intentional. And maybe that's scarier than anything in a horror movie. Because when you change the ritual, you change the memory. And when you change the memory, you rewrite the past without ever touching a book. If that hit different, if your Halloween will never feel quite the same again, then support the Truth First mission over at patreon.com/divergentfiles. Because while the algorithm pushes squirrels jumping into swimming pools, these Truth First investigations, Well, they get buried like forgotten bonfires. So like the video, share it with someone who's never questioned the costume. And most of all, please subscribe. Until next time, stay curious, stay grounded, and remember, no matter what they tell you, the truth is still out there. These investigations are powered by those who believe truth still matters. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. Join the mission at patreon.com/divergentfiles.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.